This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 15, Overcoming the Fear. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we get an honest question from someone who talks about their fear of the cricket ball, and we help them overcome that, hopefully. We also have a question about trigger moves. We talk about the difference between doing the drills that you like and doing the drills that you feel like you need to do, and we decide whether England cricket really needs a supremo. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket, or to playing better cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are. And we're going to help you do that in the next half an hour or so. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I'm in charge of things here. But also helping me out and guiding me on this path to helping you is two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Good day to you.
Good day, yes. Well,
good day, yes. Well negotiated.
I did that well, didn't I? I had a little flip and then changed it, and then, yep, absolutely.
And secondly, that man who often laughs as a self-introduction is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
You must be a jolly chap. Because you always seem to be laughing when before I've introduced you.
It's usually some sort of fumble from Gareth that initiates that, as there nearly was today. But he quickly turned down the single and made sure he stood his ground and said good day. So well done, Gareth.
My first slip used to have a little chuckle at me when I was fumbling them behind the stumps as well, mate. So it takes me back a few years, huh?
Who was that, Mr. Maru?
Mr. Maru, yeah, Rajesh Jamnadas Maru, of all people.
You don't want to be getting the reputation of symbols, do you?
That's
the last thing you want.
It's the last thing you want.
No, I was all right, mate. It was, you know, I was like anybody, really. Occasionally, you have a bit of a clanger, and that's the one that's always remembered, isn't it? You know, you don't drop a ball for two seasons, but the one that you drop, that's the one that keeps coming up in conversation. So I've got the same at Ventnor. Every time I walk through the door at Ventnor, everybody reminds me of a catch I dropped when I was 14 at Waterlooville. It was the only catch I ever dropped for Ventnor, but everybody seems to remember that one. It's a bit like, a bit like Jeff Hurst's hat-trick in the World Cup final. There was about 400,000 people watching on that day, apparently. But yeah, everybody was at Waterlooville on that Sunday game where I clanged one.
Can you remember who the batter was?
No, but what I do remember, Sam, is as it went up in the air, straight up in the air, I decided to run after it, called it. It was easy, my catch, and I fell over the stumps, unfortunately. Bit of a disappointment. Then, because I was a fairly highly strung 14-year-old who thought he was far too good, I proceeded to throw both of my gloves onto the ground, which is often the impression that I met with as I walked through the clubhouse at Steephill.
Speaking of clubs, one of the comments I got at training recently was that we were doing a pretty classic drill of laying down a target and trying to bowl to hit it on a good line and a length. And one of the pieces of feedback I got when I asked them how we could improve on it was one player said, well, do you know what? This target bowling is all well and good, but I prefer doing my drills. I've got my drills that I want to go and do, and I'd much rather do that than put a target down and bowl at it. And that got me to thinking that, I mean, this was a senior guy. He knew his game well. It got me to thinking that that's an important question that every player has to ask themselves, really, isn't it? How do you judge when to do something that you like to do against something that you've heard is good to do or the coach has told you to do? And how do you make that assessment of what's going to be best for you in the long run? Have you got any thoughts on that, Gareth?
Well, I think it comes through experience. And as I've said a million times on this show, the best players are the ones who listen to their body rather than everybody. And what you're getting there and feedback is a guy who's listening to his body and what he's thinking and what he's feeling about doing a particular practice. So I would go with him a little bit. And then the challenge to me is that if he's good at drills and he gets his drills right, then it's great to be able to stick something in front of him that he doesn't work so well at as a bit of a challenge to see if he's robust enough to deal with that and be able to come out with a decent session against targets. But probably, you know, if you're looking at 80-20 as a rough guide, 80% of the drills that he should be doing are other things that he likes doing, but he should stress test himself a little bit by doing something which is outside of his comfort zone, because that's what you're going to get in a game of cricket, really. And there's other reasons why he probably likes to do drills more than bowl at targets, because there's a number of different bowlers around the world that would get put off by targets or not enjoy it so much. So somebody like Morne Morkel that I had a little bit of time with, he would hate bowling at targets. He would practice his Yorkers and his different lengths by bowling at somebody else. And he gets his sort of cues at what the length should be off of the batter that he's bowling at, rather than actually aiming at a plastic cone or a spot on the pitch or whatever. So it's horses for courses. But to me, it's a bit of an 80-20 rule in that do what you like to do because that works for you. But you need to stress yourself as well, because ultimately that will happen in a game of cricket at some point.
It is about the difference for me, I think, anyway, between doing what's comfortable and what's right for you and getting out of your comfort zone and doing stuff which is challenging.
I actually had just written down 80-20, which is a coincidence, but my initial thought on it was how much you challenge people to move outside their comfort zones and also the timing of when you look to do it. So I would be thinking that when you've got someone who is a performer who understands what they're going to do, and yes, they have a need to go through their own processes and at certain times, and probably at what you could call a key or important time. So if you're training on the day of a game, then you let someone go through their routine, or if it's something they want to close a session with or open a session with, which they feel is particularly important, then you let them go with something that they feel comfortable with and something that they feel is going to prepare them suitably or close a session down suitably so they know that they're ready for the match day coming up. If, however, it's maybe a little bit away from a game, so you might have two sessions in a week and it's your first session, then that could be a challenge session. Or maybe if it's a little bit away from the season, you could look at doing that as well. So I'd think about the timing and when you bring in different challenges and when you let people stick to what they know. Because obviously people are going to have different demands of what they do and don't want to do. But think about how you can challenge them, but also try and sell it to them with the idea of it's not going to be... it's not going to have a negative impact, so let's try and take it on.
Yeah, that timing is an important aspect that I hadn't really thought about. Yeah, there are better and worse times to do different things, aren't there, Gareth?
There certainly are, and you know, we have gaps in our schedule, don't we? You look at our fixture list, and I've just been putting our fixture list up against our practice schedule this week, and there's some definite gaps in the team schedule that would enable us to do a little bit of uncomfortable practice and it not to have a negative effect on performance. And also it will give us the opportunity that if a couple of people have broken for a little bit as a result of the exposure that they've got, then we've got a bit of time after that session to be able to repair them and to be able to get them back and tell them why we did that and all of those things. So timing is absolutely crucial, and that's from a team point of view. But also from the individual, things will come up in a game of cricket and in a series of games of cricket that will give you an indicator that this is a time to be able to either take the pressure off of somebody or to put the pressure on. And that's what we always do as good coaches, is look for those opportunities.
OK, let's finish up this section with the yes, no round. That is three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions here, so let's fire away. Question one. England cricket needs a supremo.
Yes.
Yes.
Question two. An IPL game is a condensed scripture on cricket.
No.
No.
Third question. Play your natural game.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's about time for the questions section. On this part of the show, we read a couple of listeners' questions that have been sent in to the show. And then we decide on the best question of the week, which is a prize of an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And there's other ways to get in touch with us. which we will explain to you towards the end of the show. But for now, we have a question from George, which has been sent in that very way. And George says, I have a question about trigger moves and whether we should be trying to work with our weaknesses or strengths with one. I'm not confident playing cross-batted shots off the back foot. So, should I be trying to make this easier for myself by having a back or back and a cross trigger movement? Or should I be trying to play to my strengths by having the forward press as a trigger movement?
No problem with that. Interesting that I'm reading this, and David, please correct me if I'm reading this wrong, because you're much better at detail on questions than myself. But so I'm reading it here as if your awareness is if a trigger, your back foot game isn't very good, and to help that, you might incorporate a back and across trigger or a back trigger to, I suppose, get the weight going that way and get everything going that way so you can incorporate maybe a pull shot into the equation. But it sounds as if your strengths is a front foot game here, and the way you've worded it to me, that you generally forward press because you're looking to get onto the front foot. Now, that's how I've read it. And to me, there isn't any merit necessarily in going back and across early in order to open up your back foot game. We see people do that, but they do it very much, as you say, as a trigger movement, not to help their back foot game, but just to get their body going. For some, to get their body into the rhythm of a bowler, for others to load their thighs or to load their feet. And equally, there are people who want to move late and go forward and use that front leg of theirs as a spring to be able to move into the next shot or to come back and play pull shots. So somebody like a Ricky Ponting is a classic example of somebody who's an amazing puller, absolutely fantastic puller. But his front foot is the thing that goes down and then pushes him back to get into the ball on the back foot. And so I wouldn't associate necessarily one movement or another being the thing that's going to open up your back foot. I think what we'd need to do, and I'm going to chuck it open to you to send a little bit of footage of your setup to us, maybe over the course of the next week or so, where I can have a look at how your setup works and then also give you some idea of how you can unlock movement. Because what you're saying here is that basically you're not picking the ball up well enough or you're not moving well enough in order to be able to access the back foot shot. To me, everybody can do that if we unlock their movement pattern. So if we have an example of what your stance is like from front and side, then I'm sure that I can give you a pretty specific, individualized way that you can move, which will open up not just your back foot game that you're looking to do here, but also maybe even add a bit more to that front foot game, which I'm perceiving is your strength at present. So until that, I can't give you anything more than that, but please don't get into the mindset that a forward press is about somebody who likes a front foot and a back press is about somebody who plays off a back foot, because that isn't necessarily the case. It's about finding the movement pattern that works to unlock the way that you move.
Lavers, if you have any general rules about trigger moves when it comes to play, assuming that that there is no relationship between different types of trigger moves and different strength and weakness on the type of shot you got, which is a very sensible assumption. Are there any rules of thumb when it comes to trigger moves? Is there any, when you look at a player, sometimes you think, oh, he seems like more of a natural back and across guy, and this other guy seems like a more of a natural forward press guy, but they haven't got those movements at the moment?
There may well be. However, I wouldn't necessarily subscribe to say that you can look at someone and say that they're going to be naturally suited to one or the other. There will be some people who are naturally suited to moving and having a trigger, and there'll be people who are naturally suited to standing still. And that's something that Gareth has already said, is that it's about working out who you are and working out what type of player and what type of mover you are. But whether or not there is an automatic way you can look at someone and say back and across is what will suit you. So back loading your legs, for instance, is something that's going to suit you. Or like a drop trigger, so just squatting down might suit you, or forward pressing or standing still. So it's not a long drawn out process particularly, but you've got an opportunity for some trial and error there. You can tell to a degree when people prefer movement or don't prefer movement, but it's not always easy to work out what type of movement is exactly going to suit them straight away. The other thing I would mention in relation to the general topic of playing that short ball is something that we had an interesting issue with only probably 2 or 3 weeks ago with a player who's been very strong on the short ball for probably 2 or 3 years now. And all of a sudden he found himself not in a position to execute as well as he could. And he was a little bit concerned because he was always developing his front foot game and looking for an opportunity to push people onto the front foot. And that's why he was always developing his front foot game and an opportunity to push people onto his back foot and give him a guaranteed scoring opportunity there, which he'd done very well. But all he'd actually done in the end was he'd ended up changing the timing slightly of his movement so that at point of release, his hands were moving from the top of the swing on the way down already, as opposed to being at the top or moving upwards or at the bottom moving upwards. And he was finding very difficult to get the timing of his hands to get himself on top of the ball, to get himself in a position where he could generate any sort of power from a cross-batted shot. So the other thing I would mention is look at that. Have a look at the position of your hands and the movement of your hands at the point of release and at the point of decision as well, which is probably going to be just close to or just after release, and see where they are. And it might be that they're actually halfway down a pre-swing of the bat and they're moving downwards. So by the time you actually have made your decision of what you're going to do, the bat has then got to travel a long way to get up and then move into a cross-batted position. Again, it might not be. They might be brutally set, but that's just another thing to try and look at. It might be that you're rushed on the back foot because of the amount of movement that's required from those hands. Something you could say is probably similar to Alistair Cook at the moment, who's generally rushed in his play and limited in his movement because of the timing of his trigger being obviously being midair with his front foot. So he's not afforded a lot of time to move into a ball when it's pitched up.
Yeah, he's effective. I mean, Cookie's a great example of that, Sam. He's effectively losing the first part of the pitch, the third of the pitch, because he hasn't done that. And interestingly, Strauss and myself were talking about Cookie the other day. And I said exactly the thing that I would do is I'd get him to trigger early and get both feet on the ground prior to ball release so he can load his thighs. If his thighs are loaded, he'll be able to push off into whatever position that he wants to do. But it's been a consistency, not just now. This is something that's been in Alistair Cook's game for a long, long time. He's always been clawing at the pitch of his front foot. It just so happens now that after scoring X 1,000 runs in Test cricket, that now the bowlers are looking to pitch the ball up almost 100% of the time at him. Whereas initially, when he first came in, the easiest thing for a good fast bowler to do is to bang out in the middle of a pitch and see whether this guy is ready for that challenge, which often comes in Test cricket. Now all they're doing is bowling it between about 5 meters and 2.5 meters at him. He hardly gets a ball to cut and hardly gets a ball to play off of his hip or to pull nowadays. And so he's got to go back and work at that, but he needs that base. And so, whereas somebody like Straussie would walk across the pitch with a nice narrow stance for him, walk across his stumps. And he needed movement. He needed late movement. He needed to be on the move at point of release as opposed to being static. So this is how individual that it is. And for Cookie, he needs to be static with his legs loaded so he can move into the ball. Whereas Strauss, he needed to be on the move in the same way as Stephen Smith, who's probably pushing AB de Villiers at the moment for the best batter in the world. Stephen Smith is somebody who needs movement, and we see that every time. He got 60-odd again in a game that I watched earlier in the week, and he needs that movement to open up all of his shots, not just the pull shot or the drive shot, but all of his shots. So it's about finding that one for you, and what I would encourage is sending through a couple of still shots or maybe even a bit of movement stuff from the side and from the front, and I'd be very happy to have a look at that and give you some recommendations.
Absolutely. And let's also take a moment to applaud George's question as well, because it shows that George is thinking about things. He's, as Graham Gooch puts it, he is on receive. He's ready to listen to advice. He wants to know how best to improve his game, and he's coming up with his own theories on how to do it, and all of those things
are positives.
Absolutely, it's brilliant, and Gucci's got that absolutely spot on there. And it's going to be fascinating to see where Cookie, George, and Jonathan Schrock go over the next few months.
The next question. I enjoyed the question as much as I did the content of the questions. You see what you mean? I think it's a very well written question. So well done to Dino, who wrote in. And Dino says, the biggest problem I have faced is overcoming the fear of the ball. This fear is insidious, and try as you might, you can never fully extinguish it. It sits at the back of your mind, created by all of the painful experiences that you've had over the years of playing cricket, and comes out when you don't want it to. It's there when you bat and face the bouncer. It's there when you bowl and have the ball hit back hard at you. And it's there when you field at short leg or just about anywhere on the ground. It keeps you from taking half chances and slows your reactions and hinders your game. I find it amazing to watch international players who have no fear of the ball whatsoever and put their bodies in the line of fire day in, day out. So how does one overcome this most basic mental hurdle
and improve his or her game?
Is Dino Stuart Broad's new nickname?
Well, if Stuart Broad is that literary, I'll eat my hat.
Oh, you two are horrible. I'm going to stand up for Broad here. I'm going to stand up for him, mate. He's I feel for him at the moment, and he will come through because he's a champion, that kid. He was from the first moment he stepped foot in England change room, and he will come good. And I think probably the thing that will come good for him is he'll get a couple of wickets here, there and everywhere, and all of a sudden the whole thing will come back. He's just a bit low on confidence, and he's a poor sod. What a question. I love it. And I'll talk about it in a minute, but maybe Sam should have a go at this one first.
Go for it, ladies.
I was just on the Stuart Broad thing. I actually think he looks like he's going to bowl well at the moment. Whether or not the conditions are going to be perfect for him, I think he could go really big in the next 18 months now, as long as he's happy with his body and things like that. But that's another discussion anyway. To be honest, I've not worked with anyone who has got a fear of the ball in this kind of way. I've had people who at times have maybe been slightly weaker in specific shots, and they may be a little bit wary of the short ball, but we've gone back to basics and we've taken the hard ball away from them, and we've put them through a graduated process of getting from a very simple controlled environment and then moving step by step back towards a match environment, and that's benefited, and that's had a positive effect on them. But that's when I'm probably focusing on a specific skill or a specific area of their game. And this is obviously very, very difficult. First of all, if you are in the situation, he's mentioned short leg, I'd probably try and stay out of the way of short leg if you could do. But when I read this, I remember thinking, I don't really have loads of advice for you as a whole generic subject. If there were individual shots and individual things we can go through, you could go through that graduated process. But I was actually looking forward to hear what Mr. Garraway was going to say about this one.
Well, I'll give it a good old go for you, mate. First thing, Dino, it's wonderful that despite the fact that there is this fear, that you've kept playing and you still want to find a way to try and beat this fear. And the second thing I'll say to you is, anybody who has ever played the game of cricket against these hard cricket balls that are coming at you, who hasn't feared the ball at some point, has never played the game of cricket at a level that has challenged them. Because as soon as you go up a level, whether you're under 14 going up to senior cricket, you'll be facing different types of challenges, whether it be bounce, whether it be pace, whether it be pace off the bat. You know how hard people are hitting the ball nowadays. And that's one of the reasons why at T20 level, at international and professional level, you don't necessarily have to have catches in that first six. Because honestly, we looked at it a few years ago and just thought, people are hitting it so hard, somebody is going to get horribly injured on the drive, or, you know, in one of these silly positions that we were coming up with to try and be able to defend the edge of a circle in those first six. So, you know, anybody who's not had a fear in their life has played a very comfortable level of cricket, or just been incredibly good. Because even the incredibly good ones that I've played with, and more importantly, probably coached, have alluded to me numerous times in their career that some fear has been in there. And you only got to read Kevin Peterson's autobiography to realise that even somebody as good as KP in that Ashes series that England lost 5-0, he was facing Mitchell Johnson, I think, in Brisbane, and just saying to himself, oh, my God, I think I'm going to die. And that's one of the best players in the world. So it is an unbelievable sport in terms of fear. And I congratulate you for wanting to try and counteract it. Now, one of the things that I've found has really helped people that have got fears is increasing their skill levels. Because often this confidence, this anxiety, which is what you're describing to us in your question, is all about the fact that you perceive that your skills aren't sufficient to be able to deal with the ball coming at you from a bowler, or to be able to stop the ball, or to be in a strong position when the ball comes back at you as a bowler. Comes off a bat back at you as a bowler. So it's about increasing your skills. So let's take the bowling one, for example. Can you facilitate a drill where you run up and bowl a target or a set of stumps, and a batter start standing just to one side of the stumps, as you come out of your follow-through, hits a ball back at you, and maybe that ball could be a hard tennis ball to start off with and then progress up to a cricket ball. That's certainly something I've done with spinners, where I've come down the wicket as the ball's gone past me or in the process of going past me, I'll ping a hard tennis ball back at them to increase their ability to react, increase their skills, increase their ability. And then all of a sudden you do it with a cricket ball. And it's something I've done very recently with one of the spinners at our school who's now playing second team cricket with a county. So, these things can be done. The same as the tennis ball stuff on the short ball, the same as progressing that upwards. It's about your skills. And my aim for you would be to identify the parts of a game that fear you the most and to develop your skills to be able to counteract that particular challenge. As that happens, your perceived fear of the ball will drop because your skills will be more up to scratch and often beyond the level of challenges you're going to be facing. And that's something, going back to Jonathan Trott, who we spoke about earlier, I wouldn't change his method. I would look to try and challenge that short ball area, increase his skills to be able to deal with that challenge. Because to me, that's the only way he's going to get through that, is if he perceives that his skill levels are sufficient to overcome the challenge that he's undoubtedly going to face. Maybe not in this series in the West Indies on slow wickets, but actually definitely when he comes back and places the likes of Trent Bolton, Mitchell Starc and Mitchell Johnson and various others that are going to be pinging balls down at England this summer. So to me, it's skills. But you're normal. That's what happens to people. We do have some fears because you're playing in a level of cricket that challenges you, and I applaud you for keeping going.
That is one of the things that while you're working on this, it's easy to forget that it's never quite as bad as you think it's going to be. You're always in your mind, the fear makes the problem a lot worse than it actually is. And you always think the worst. People naturally think the worst, as you said, Gareth. And then when you actually practice and you actually try and you realise it's not quite as bad as I thought it was, then that gives you confidence as well. So just build on really what you said there, Gareth. I found from my experience, personal experience as well, I've found sometimes if I've played at a higher level and then gone to play, you know, a knockabout game of cricket on a Wednesday night or something, you know, when it's there's not that much on the outcome, then the ball isn't being hit as hard as often, and it's not going quite as high up in the air or whatever, then you play a couple of those games and you get a couple of those where the challenge is slightly less, and you start to realise that, oh, well, hang on a minute, it's not quite as bad as I thought it was. So perhaps I can take the step back up to the level that I want to, and it's going to be okay. And the more you get used to that idea, the more confidence you're going to get. And also that's built into your what you were saying, Gareth, where you're working on your technique
just your ability to do those things.
It is, and also the acceptance that what you're feeling is normal. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not experiencing something that most players that have gone up levels and challenged themselves haven't experienced. So often by getting an awareness, actually others are in the same position as you, is a little bit of therapy in its own right, because it can be a lonely place, can't it? You know, feeling this fear, and it's not something that we tend to talk about in changing rooms and amongst our peers. And that's why something like this show is a fantastic outlet for somebody to ask people who are independent, who are distant, questions that you maybe wouldn't ask of your mates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, well done to you. But I should imagine there's a few people listening to this answer or set of answers now that will be relating to this very, very same predicament.
It's soapbox time now. That is 60 seconds of uninterrupted comment from one of the members of the team. This week, it's Sam Lavery's turn. He's got something lined up for us.
Labour, over to you.
Well, one of the things we talk about a lot of the time is doing basic things well and keeping it very simple and trying to make the game as simple as possible. I guess with a lot of the information we get that goes out, that can be very difficult. But today's one thing that I just want to remind a lot of my players about, a lot of players out there, that we need to get right all the time. And that's very simple, is that the sun is now out. It's now starting to get warm. And we've got to make sure we look after our bodies in the right way. We've had probably 4 or 5 months indoors where you have water stations in the corner of the sports hall. You don't have any need for sunblock or hats, little things like this. Let's get the basics right now. So from the start, let's make sure everyone has their water bottles filled up. Let's make sure everyone has their sunscreen on. The last thing we want is someone going down ill or finding themselves a problem with dehydration or sunstroke or anything like that. So do the right thing. Get your hat on, get your drink ready, and get your sunblock on, or slip, slap, stop, as they would say down under.
And that is the end of this week's Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. We are off in a moment. Before we go, we need to do our admin. And the first part of that is to decide on the winner of this week's coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy. It's all online there at pitchvision.com/academy. Go and have a look at it when you get a chance. And Gareth, we had two excellent questions this week. One from George about trigger moves and Dino's epic poem about fear of the cricket ball. Which one did you prefer?
Well, I say it every week. Two brilliant questions, as you say, David. Real good detail. So thank you for that, both George and Dino. But this week I'm going to go with Dino because I think it's a brave question. It's a question that I think probably needs to be asked more because I think there's more people than Dino that experience this. And certainly going back to my own career, facing some pretty fiery bowlers. I certainly had some doubts in my mind, and I know that others do too. So really good, Dino. Thank you for the question. I hope there's something in our answers which helps you out. And please let us know how you get on.
Yeah, please do. Want to hear more from Dino. He's got a wonderful writing style. Now, Gareth, if someone else wanted to send in their question, and don't worry, it doesn't need to be as epic as Dino's. It can be as prosaic as you like. Then how would they send in their question to us?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Social media-wise, you can get us through Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter at pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to this show, you can do so by subscribing in your favourite podcast app. We would appreciate it if you do that. And if you want to rate us while you're there, then feel free to do so. You can subscribe in iTunes or any other way that you like, and if you want to listen to the show by streaming it on your computer, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link, and you've got all the details there for streaming the show, downloading it, using the RSS feed or whatever else you like. There's a bunch of apps that we link to as well if you want to use any one of those. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week.
Garris.
Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.